Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Listeners, welcome to Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Rashida and Robert. It's August 25th and we're broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington. And I am joined by my brother in martial arts and co-host from Burbank, California, Sifu Robert Steele. Sifu Bob, how you doing today?
Hey, hey, I am doing extremely well today.
Extremely well.
Too extremely. That must be very well. And
yeah.
It's beautiful weather out here. A couple things I've got to go over at the start of the show.
Okay.
We have hit this week, as of today, our listener base has reached 36,422 listeners to date.
Woo!
Oh,
yeah, right on! Yeah!
Now,
thank you, listeners.
As everybody knows, in 2 weeks we have the Martial Arts History Museum Hall of Honors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to put a shout out real quick before we start. I didn't list the whole thing because there's 115 inductees, right? So I
right.
just knew people that were either friends on Facebook or you personally knew.
Mm-hmm.
So there's about 10, maybe.
Okay.
So I want to shout out to Dan Anderson. David Burchett. David is the one you wanted to visit Valencia Martial Arts. He's the owner.
Oh, okay. Right.
Jamie Cashin, Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham, William Christopher Ford, Mark Gary, Daniel Heck, Felix Macias Jr., which happens to be our guest for next week's show.
Right.
And Professor Mike Sandoz. Professor
Yay!
Mike, congratulations to all that are being inducted next week. Now,
and that includes you. I can't let this go without saying that it includes you. The
yes.
Martial Arts History Museum Hall of Honors has included Sifu Robert Deal into the Hall of Honors. Congratulations, bro.
Yes, thank you.
Yay, take lots of pictures and send them to me.
A lot of pictures. Oh, absolutely. I have somebody on my phone when I'm up there. Now, the one thing Mike from the museum said to me is he said, you know, you get to talk about yourself for 5 minutes. And
okay.
I looked at him and says, you know what? I'm going to be so nervous. I'm probably going to wet myself. And he says, no, you don't want to do that. So what I thought of going back to the old ad is just imagining my audience in their underwear. Maybe that will take my nerves away. Now, I wanted to say a couple things. It was funny. Last week, there were some technical difficulties. And my guess, because, of course, you, Sifu, had to miss the show because you had a tournament that you were arbitrator and judge in. So there was some very colorful language used by our guest. And you or I didn't think too much of it because we tend to use that type of language, even though we curb it on the show, of course. And, you know, and he said, I won't apologize for this. Well, my wife gave me crap over this, and I'll tell you why. She said, great, Rusty's going to hear this. She's going to think, wow, I was gone for 1 week and the show went to hell.
This is probably what she wanted to say.
You big dummy.
That's exactly what she wants. In fact, I think she did say that. And to anybody out there that uses voice text, please be careful. I could have, you know, Rusty and I are the best of friends. I've been married 27 years. There's no romantic connection, nor will there ever be. We're just great friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was voice texting her about the show today, and I said, I swear, this is how it came out. I said, you will have it tomorrow. Meaning, no, it's on the show. And somehow, it came out, my love.
I remember that.
You do this in business and sued for sexual harassment. So those of you out there who use voice text, please check before you press send.
Yes.
I didn't do that, but I saw that afterwards, and she flipped out.
I didn't quite flip out. I just kind of, what did I write back? Like, WTF?
No, you said, did you just call me my love? And I went, and I was in the middle of typing going, no, I did not say that.
Oh, God, yeah. Be careful out there with voice to text, because that, yeah. Especially if you're going to write emails to your bosses. Well, anyway, let's get this show on the road. Let's do that. I want to take the time to bring on a good friend of mine, at least on Facebook, but soon to be a good friend of mine because she's now on the show. I want to bring Jeannie Capps Writes on the show, who is our special guest co-host. So welcome, Jeannie. Thanks for joining Dynamic Dojo.
Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be a great night.
It is. It's going to be awesome. It's been at least about a month or so since we've had a guest co-host. So me and Sifu Bob are really excited, really, really excited. Now, for our listeners out there that are listening, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And after this segment of news and shout-outs and our trivia question of the week, a little after 6:30, we will have Professor Malia Bernal joining us on the line, and we're going to be talking about her background in martial arts, her fitness classes and her fitness programs, Shangdai Kung Fu, all sorts of stuff. So, you know, sit tight and be patient with us. Let's get through. We'll get through this first segment as quickly as we can. But stay tuned because we have fun during this first segment. So, again, our phone number is 347-677-0699. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started with some shout-outs. Now, Jeannie, I think, didn't you have an announcement about an unfortunate loss in the martial art community that we've had over the past couple weeks?
Yes, and I'm saddened to report that Grandmaster Ted Tabora passed away August 12th of this year.
Mm-hmm.
He was born August 26th of 1940, and Grandmaster was very well respected in this industry, and he was laid to rest at Rose Hill Memorial Park in Whittier, California, on the 24th.
Mm.
And we were just so saddened to lose him. I mean, he was born and raised in Hawaii, and he began his training under his cousin's tutelage in a backyard dojo. You know, how often many people start.
Yeah.
He later moved to California and discovered Okinawa Te Dojo, headed by another Hawaiian-born instructor, Sihan Gordna Diversasola.
Diversasola, yes.
Yeah.
And he got his black belt in 1968.
Wow.
So I'm actually looking at his website at the moment, and he had an 8th degree black belt in Lima Lama system founder, 9th degree black belt under Grandmaster Tino. Oh, unfortunately, I cannot pronounce that last name. Ah. But
I never could say it either.
Thank you. And he also had a black belt in Kaja Kempo under Adriano Imperato, Sijo.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, very well respected. I actually had the pleasure of meeting him many years ago as a photographer in martial arts. And he was just such a humble, sweet man. And his expertise is greatly going to be missed.
Yes, yes. Greatly missed. I don't remember ever getting the chance to meet him at any of the Kaja Kempo events, but I grew up knowing his name. He was that much of a driving force in the martial arts in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and the world has lost a true visionary in the martial arts. So you'll be greatly missed, Sihan. Wow, that's sad. Aw, I'm depressed. Well, thank you for giving us that information. So he's interred in Whittier also?
That's my understanding. I'm not sure if that's the fact. That's all I could find was the information on his personal website.
Oh, okay.
That's where his services were. And typically where services are, they tend to be buried there, but that's not always true.
Right, right.
But
well, he will definitely.
If people would like to visit his internment site, then go on to his website or contact one of the schools. I'm sure they might know that information.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for that information, Jeannie. All right. Well, let's go to birthdays and shout-outs. I just want to send some shout-outs out there to some people that I know on Facebook that have had birthdays or are going to have birthdays. As of Wednesday the 28th, that's next Wednesday, one of my longtime students, Robert Steitler, is having a birthday. I'd give him a shout-out on Facebook also, but he's never on. And then on Thursday, August 29th, one of my Botokucon classmates, Sensei Youngmin Kim, is having a birthday. And then the very next day, August 30th, Soke Robert Hill of Botokucon Karate, whom I inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame a couple months ago, he'll be having his birthday. And Bob, any birthdays and shout-outs that you have on your end?
I do. On both of them, on August 21st, this past week, which I believe was Wednesday, is Sifu Guru Lee Lolio out of California. And also out of California, Sifu Mark Geary, which I just mentioned is going to be at Thea Hall of Honors in 2 weeks.
Right on. Very cool. Very cool. Well, to everyone that had a birthday this past week or is going to have a birthday in this next week, I've got a special tune for you. Right, happy birthday to everybody for the last week of August. Right on. And Jeannie, do you happen to have any cool events happening in the Portland area going on over there?
We do have a variety of them, but unfortunately I don't have all my information up with them. I do know in November we're going to have a Kaji Kempo seminar.
Woo!
By Brent Dunker.
Oh, right on. Is that going to be there in Portland, or?
It is going to be here in Portland, and they've been doing it for several years now, and we always have an incredibly great time. Tons of masters, grandmasters, professors all show up, and it's an incredible learning experience and getting a chance to just hang with some really great people. You know, we
right
get a lot
on.
Of people from California as well as from Hawaii.
Wow.
You know, Grandmaster Sid Lopez comes, Grandmaster Gabe Vargas comes.
Wow.
To be honest with you, my mind's overwhelmed. I don't know how many. I mean, there's probably 30 people that come to teach.
Whoa.
You know, you can't put one room. It's more than most people can handle.
Right. Well, be sure to send me an invitation. I haven't been to a seminar in a while.
I will make sure that we have all that. And, you know, of course, we'll make sure it gets put on your Facebook, too, for those that look at your Facebook.
Yeah, that would be great. I might have some students that might be interested in attending that, because the martial arts that I teach at my school has a lot of Kaji Kempo influence, but they haven't trained the same way I had trained. You know, because we add a lot more of the Filipino martial arts and Tai Chi into it. So I really want to expose them to, you know, my background. So I'm hoping they'll be able to handle it.
Now, Sifu, how far is Portland from your area?
It's only a couple hours.
See, that's not bad at all. That's well worth it, too.
Yeah. And, you know, a great weekend trip. I think it'd be cool. Awesome.
You know, I do want to bring up, it's funny how sometimes, because when we started, we had no idea what we were going to be doing on this show, and we've added segments just by chance, and it's funny, and we thought it was both a good idea. Last month, somebody just said, you know, I was marketing the show, and they said, well, I won't be able to listen to your show, it's my birthday, so wish me happy birthday on your show. Mm-hmm. So from then on, we've just been wishing everybody we knew that was having a birthday the week of the show happy birthday, which is just a really nice thing to do. It's some of these segments have just come around like we don't even really know. How did we start that again?
Well, Tommy Bogansky started it. So thanks, Tommy.
Right. And it happened to be the week of your birthday and Silky Greg Wooldridge's birthday as well. So we started off with a bang.
Right. Now, when's your birthday, Jeannie?
Well, unfortunately, I had mine.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
August 14th. August 14th, I officially turned over 21. Many times over.
Happy birthday. Yay.
Thank you.
Yay. All right. Well, let's move on to some of the martial arts news. Now, these particular two news stories were kind of interesting, and I just happened to find them on my Twitter feed, and they just jumped out at me, and I don't know why I posted this one, because most people would be like, what's so interesting about that? But I found it interesting, mainly because I'm into the culture of Japan. But Indonesia just yesterday hosted its first sumo competition outside of Japan in 5 years. So the first sumo competition outside of Japan in 5 years. There hasn't been any types of sumo matches outside of Japan. And if there are, it's pretty rare. So I guess the last time it's happened, it's been 5 years. So the 24th, thousands of people flocked to the opening day of the sumo competition in Jakarta, paying up to $90 in U.S. money for prime seats, as the popularity of all things Japanese grows among the Indonesians, all the way from learning the language to eating the cuisine to embracing the sport. Tsukiji Yoshida, from the local organizer Gotanda Denchi, said, "This event is like an introduction to Japanese culture. However, the sport is no longer purely Japanese, with many foreign-born wrestlers in its top ranks of Yokozuna, occupied right now by two Mongolians." Not Japanese guys, but two Mongolians. Now, the last official sumo tournament outside of Japan was held in Mongolia in 2008. Sumo is gradually emerging from a series of scandals that have tainted its centuries-old image, such as match-fixing, drug use, and bullying. And all of those allegations have eroded its popularity, although it still has a huge following. So congratulations to Indonesia for hosting its first sumo competition outside of Japan. Right on. All right. Next on the news board, 40 years after Bruce Lee's death, the Bruce Lee Legacy Collection of DVDs is released. Shout Factory will release the 11-disc Bruce Lee Legacy Collection around October 2013. The collection contains all three of Lee's finished Hong Kong films, The Big Boss, Fist of Fury, and Way of the Dragon, as well as The Game of Death, a feature that was carpentered together using footage from an unfinished project and released in 1978. That's really what it says, that it was carpentered. That's really what it says. I'm just reading it verbatim. Now, two feature-length documentaries are also included in this DVD, Bruce Lee, The Legend, which was released in 1977, and the TV production of I Am Bruce Lee that was released in 2012, as well as a wealth of other supplementary material. Now, the collection was briefly released earlier this month, but Shout Factory had pulled the collection from distribution for reported quality control, and the latest news says that it will release again by the end of October. So there's that for the martial arts news. Yay. All right. Let's move on into the health news. Now, you guys both, I'm sure, have heard the stories about how that people are either right-brained or left-brained, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, a recent study debunks the pop psychology idea that we are either right-brained or left-brained. So pretty interesting. Now, until the 20th century, many people, including me and including many scientists, believed that bumps and indentations on the skull help determine an individual's personality. That idea, called phrenology, has been thoroughly discredited, of course, but now it appears that it's time to debunk a more recent popular assumption about the brain and personality. That idea being that individuals tend to be either more creative or more analytical depending on which side of their brain they use most. For a new large brain imaging study published last week in the journal PLOS-1, it's found that no evidence that people are predominantly right-brained or creative or left-brained analytical exists. In other words, there are no differences. I was like, I read this, I was like, what? And it was a very thorough study. A team of University of Utah researchers spent 2 years reviewing the brain scans of 1,011 individuals aged 7 through 29 years old. Now, the study comprised of brain function lateralization. I can't say that. Anyhow, brain function lateralization was measured for each participant. Now, lateralization, I swear to gosh, I'm not talking right today. Lateralization refers to the specialization of certain mental processes to primarily one hemisphere of the brain. Now, the researchers then broke the brain down to 7,000 separate regions and analyzed which regions of each participant's brain showed the most lateralization. And they found brain connection patterns that were strongly correlated with either the right or left hemisphere. Let me try that again. I'm sorry, everybody.
Wow.
I can't talk today. Take two. Okay. They found brain connection patterns that were strongly correlated with either the right or left hemisphere of the brain. Connections associated with language and the perception of internal stimuli, those produced by the body, tended to occur in the left hemisphere. For example, while connections associated with the perception of external stimuli, those produced by the environment, were more likely to appear in the right hemisphere. But none of the participants' brains demonstrated a preference over one hemisphere or the other. Now, what's even more interesting is that this study had found that there is no gender preference for a particular hemisphere. A common misconception up until nowadays tended to point that women tended to be more left-brained, that women tended to be more right-brained, emotional and stuff like that, and men tended to be more left-brain, analytical and stuff like that. And the study found out it had nothing to do with hemisphere. So, wow, completely blew that idea out of the water, didn't it? So
it did.
That was it. It did, because I believed it. I believed it, and I still kind of don't believe that the study found that, because, you know, sometimes technology and science, you know, when they find new stuff like that, it's almost too good to be true, you know, to think that science had gone so far. But it has, and it's proven. There is no gender preference to right or left brainedness. Is that a word? Brainedness? There I go making up words again. Or anything like that. What was that, Jeannie?
It works for me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, cool. That was it for the health news. Let's move on to
weird news.
All right, Bob, what do we got for weird news?
Well, this comes from Ohio. A man in, a gun safe containing 285 pounds of marijuana was
Holy
delivered
crap.
To the wrong address.
Wait, delivered?
Delivered.
Okay, I can't wait to hear this.
A man in Western Ohio found 285 pounds of pot stuffed into a Mexican-made gun storage safe that he recently purchased on the internet, authorities said. The 1,000-pound steel safe ordered from Champion Safe Company of Provo, Utah, was made in Nogales, Mexico, and shipped by truck from Mexico to Champion's warehouse near Mansfield, Ohio. Shelby County Sheriff John Lenhart said on Saturday, the safe was delivered on June 19th. to the customer in Western Ohio by an independent driver working for Champion, Lenhart said. The marijuana, tightly wrapped in 10 28-pound packages, has an estimated street value of $420,000, according to Lenhart.
What the hell?
Dang.
Yeah. He said the truck shipment contained 25 to 30 safes and that all the orders were free of drugs. Lenhart said his office has been working with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration on the case and had decided not to reveal it publicly to avoid impeding the investigation. Authorities are not releasing the name of the customer for personal safety reasons. The driver who delivered the safe to the customer has been cleared of any wrongdoing. But the driver who delivered the shipment from Mexico to Ohio is missing, according to Lenhart. He said the DEA normally would not be interested in what is considered by federal agents to be a relatively small amount of marijuana, but the DEA is interested in learning more about the delivery method and size of such an operation. It's a pretty decent way of smuggling, Lenhart said. My guess is that it's not the first time it's happened. Can you imagine? That is a small, the DEA considers that a small amount. Wow.
That whatever was in that safe could have bought my house. I mean, that's crazy.
And it's funny, in California, that's not even a huge down payment on a house.
Right.
Why can I never get that lucky?
What was that?
Why can I never get that lucky to find something of value like that when I go on those kind of sales?
I know, right? But even then, how do you go about, you know, pawning it off for money? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How do you go
carefully.
About it? Carefully, slowly. And we're not suggesting that anyone try that, folks. Just making sure we know. Just making sure we know that. All right.
And this moves us on into weird laws. Weird laws this week are from Vermont. Lawmakers made it obligatory for everybody to take at least one bath each week on Saturday night. In bar, all residents shall this one's sort of redundant because this is another city saying that all residents shall bathe every Saturday night. No person, now this is kind of weird. I can't imagine this. No person may keep a skunk as a pet. No kidding.
You see, they are insane.
And that is my weird news and my weird laws for the week of August 25th.
That's awesome. Yay for Bob.
Weird news.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to the trivia of the week, and then we're going to take a short break. And then after the break, we will be joined with Professor Malia Bernal. All right. So here is our trivia question of the week. Now, if you're the first caller with the correct right answer, you get to win a chance to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Bob, or to be a special guest, one of the two, or you can be both. We don't care. So here is the trivia question of the week. All right. Did you know that Chuck Norris founded his own style of martial arts? What is the art called? Now, let me repeat that again. Chuck Norris founded an actual style of martial arts. What is that art called? Be the first caller here on Dynamic Dojo, 347-677-0699. And if you're the first caller, you get to be a guest co-host or a special guest on Dynamic Dojo. Awesome. All right. Pretty cool. And current co-host can't answer, so you can't answer, Jeannie. Sorry.
Yeah, I picture Jeannie Googling it right now.
Actually, I just thought to be afraid, be very afraid. It's Chuck Norris system.
Yeah. Be very afraid. And when you do call in, make sure that you say the name of the art with utmost respect, because it's Chuck Norris. All right. Let's do this. Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a short break. And me and my co-hosts are going to go in the green room, and we're going to contact Professor Malia Bernal. And we'll be back in about 4 minutes. We'll be right back after this.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better, and kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Oh, there we go. There's my mic. We are back. I was having some mic difficulties there. Sorry about the delay there in getting back on the air. Well, we are back, 347-677-0699, and we have Professor Malia Bernal on the line with us. But before we bring up her mic, I just want to read a little bio to kind of get our listeners up to speed as to who Professor Malia Bernal is. Malia Bernal began studying Wan Hop Kune Do at the age of 22, training under Wan Hop Kune Do founder Grandmaster Al Dacascos. Malia quickly realized she loved the martial arts. She said, "I knew it was for me the minute I knew I could compete and I had the opportunity to be number one. I was born a competitor. Give me anything that was a challenge and that I had to fight for, and that was for me." Now, Malia not only broke boundaries for gender, as she insisted on competing with male martial artists as their equal, but she transformed the movement and look of competitive forms. She pushed the softer kung fu styles to the forefront, designing uniforms that emphasized grace and lines. When she performed, she captivated, often causing the entire room to stop and watch. She was also one of the few, if only, competitors asked to break down her forms for the judges' panel. Now, in September 1974, Malia made history as the first woman ever on the cover of Black Belt magazine. A pioneer of women in martial arts, Sifu Malia dominated the tournament circuit in the late 60s and early 70s, reigning as the number one woman fighter and number one woman in kata in the USA for five consecutive years, which is a tough feat because, you know, being in the competitive field myself, five consecutive years, that's tough to do. She was also the only female three-time recipient of the coveted Golden Fist Award. Malia made a name for herself in a predominantly male sport, becoming a kung fu legend and an internationally recognized champion. Now, while her list of accomplishments is stellar, among them a place in the AMA Hall of Fame, the Who's Who in the Martial Arts, Lifetime Achievement Award at Masters Hall of Fame, a number one rating in Professional Karate magazine, and media appearances, including a film cameo alongside Chuck Norris, Malia's energy and enthusiasm for life and learning is unstoppable. When not teaching, she pursues other interests such as motivational speaking, fitness, and further developing the Xiangdai style of Kung Fu and working on her memoir, White Belt Master. Frequently referred to as a legend in her own time, Malia Bernal is truly a paragon of martial arts. So it is me and Sifu Bob's and Jeannie's greatest honor to welcome Malia Bernal to the show. Welcome, Malia. Thanks for joining us.
Good Lord. Was that all about me?
That was all about you.
I forgot I've accomplished all those things. Good thing you refreshed my memory.
Awesome. Now, I've pretty much have given away a lot of your background. I've already pretty much
now
given away a lot.
Now we can stop and have a cup of coffee. It's all over.
There you go. Now I've got my cup of tea right here in front of me, and I hope you guys have something to drink too. Now a lot of the stuff that I had given our listeners already was after you had started in the martial arts, and I know there were other things that you had studied during that time. But can you tell our listeners what got you started in martial arts? What attracted you to One Hop Kune Do specifically?
Well, I actually didn't start out in One Hop Kune Do, and I had no desire really to take martial arts. I just happened to come from a family of a lot of brothers and sisters, and I was the baby. So as a youngster, I was always fighting with the brothers and sisters. And as I grew up older and older and older, I was married, and my husband thought, what could I give my wife that she doesn't have? And he thought, well, she's such a sportly woman and she's so aggressive. I think I'll get her a gift of martial arts. So it was a gift certificate to any school that I found that I wanted to take martial arts in.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's how it started. So when I started, of course, you know, I shopped around. How did I know what I was looking for? I had no clue. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, man. You know, you live in the neighborhood, you see the neighborhood schools, you see judo schools, taekwondo schools, you see all these different schools, but to me, I had no clue what they meant. And so I thought to myself, one who's always been, I have to know exactly what it is I'm going to take. So I thought, okay, so I went on a hunt, and I went to all these schools. And actually, by the time I got to the Chinese school, the truth be told is I thought it was a Chinese restaurant because I didn't know about Kung Fu. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go in here. Either I'm going to get some food or it's another school. So I walked in, and sure enough, it turned out to be a Kung Fu school. And what I saw just totally captivated my attention. And it was really funny because when I walked into the school, there was this man on a ladder hanging outside the front door, pounding nails into the building. Well, later I was to find out, I thought he was a janitor. It was my teacher. It was Aldo Castro's out there. So that was really, my beginning was all very confusing in that school. But I decided that was sexual I wanted. That was the style I liked. And then, of course, I signed up. But one of my conditions in signing up is I wanted to see a beginner class and an intermediate class and what I would look like at the end. So when I started Aldecast, because it was not teaching one hot Kune Do, it hadn't started yet. At that time, we would just teach Kempo Kung Fu. So when I started out, I started wearing a little black karate geese. The pants were about up to my knees. It was hysterical. So I started in Kempo Kung Fu, and then later it went to Chung Fa Kung Fu. And then, of course, I was always involved with Kaju Kempo Self-Defense Institute. And then eventually he went into One Hot Kune Do, and that is where I went out and really gave my 100% for the art of One Hot Kune Do and tried to build a name for forms and fighting for women. But also,
and you
I
sure
say,
did.
I was really fortunate enough to be able to also train with one other person for not a real long time, but long enough to have learned a lot. And that was with Sifu Wong Jack Man in Chinatown. And so that basically is my background in martial arts. And here and there I've done other things, but the duration of all my training, of course, was with Aldecascos.
Wow. Wow, Aldecascos and Wong Jack Man, those are wow.
They're two of the best. I mean, I've always said and will always say, you know, no matter what, the best trainer, instructor, fighter, all wrapped in a package at that time was Aldecascos because I loved that he taught Kung Fu, which was just a polished version of street fighting that he interpreted to us. And I liked that. I remember being in the school and just there for 6 weeks, and he threw me in my first tournament. Well, I didn't even know what he was talking about. I was dumb enough to say, yes, oh, yeah, I'll go. And because I came in and when I started training, I was strong. When I came into the school, I had a choice. I either was going to be a water skier and compete professionally or martial arts. And so I had to make a choice. And I thought, oh, I can water ski forever. Kung Fu is new. I want to do that. So I got into there, and when I went, I had strong arms and strong legs from all this water skiing. So he said, aha, I have my female fighter. And so he said, come on, we'll put you in a tournament. I didn't know anything about tournaments, nothing other than he said, you're going to do nothing more than what you're doing here. You're going to kick and punch at somebody who's kicking and punching at you. No difference than training with your classmates. And I said, well, I think I can do that. Oh my God.
And you did.
Oh, well, yeah,
did.
But not without getting the first six tournaments. I think I was disqualified out of fear I'd hit everybody real hard.
Oh, then I don't feel so bad then.
Frightened to death.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, right on. Well, you know, definitely I sure am glad that you chose martial arts. I mean, I'm sure, you know, water skiing would have been cool too, because when I was coming up in Kaju Kempo, One Hot Kune Do, under Sifu Terry Faircloth, under Sifu Al, your name was household in the studio. And all the women, you were our motivation. When we got hit, you know, got a black eye or something, we'd be like, nah, you know, what would Malia do, right? Hit you back. Oh. That's what she would do. So I'll hit you back. I don't care if you're a dude.
I'm sure I didn't have any brains in my head way back then, because it was embarrassing. I looked like I was always, I looked like I was an abused woman, because
oh, no.
I had black and blue marks all over my body. Oh. I didn't want to go into the water and water ski anymore, because what happened to you? You know, when you trained with Aldecascos way back in the day, that was training. Well, I mean, there was no pussyfooting around here. We didn't have mats. We didn't have equipment. We didn't have anything but our bare knuckles and our poor little feet. And I trained with Eric Lee, Teddy Sotelo. I trained with a bunch of Filipinos and Chinese and whites that didn't want women in the school. They didn't want them there. So every woman that ever came into the school, they tried to scare them to death, beat them up, get them out. But not this cookie. I'm not that easily frightened. And,
hell
you know,
yeah.
No. You have to work a few more bruises than that to get me out. But it was an adventure and a ride and a lifestyle I would never change for anything. It was fabulous.
Right on. Right on. Like, you know, today, you know, I tell my own students about, quote unquote, the old days, because, you know, when I trained Kajikembo, my sifu trained us the same way. Concrete, no sparring gear. Hey, got a fat lip? Oh, well, you know, that kind of thing. Deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
But when you're dealing with people like Eric Lee, Ted Sotelo, oh, my gosh. Well, you know, Master Ted scared the hell out of me.
I have to tell you a story about Eric Lee. Eric Lee was always late to class. Why was Eric Lee always late to class? Because he always was flirting with some beautiful blonde out in the parking lot. And he hasn't changed. He's still that way today.
No wonder he was being followed around at the Master
School. You're so funny. I can tell you so many fabulous stories with all these guys that now everybody knows. You know, they're up there and have made a fabulous name for themselves, but I know the truth. You know, I have great respect for Teddy Sotelo. I mean, if ever I was going to battle, Teddy Sotelo would go with me. I think he's fabulous, and I think anybody who could ever, ever, ever do a seminar with Teddy Sotelo on street fighting technique and all of that should do it, because you're going to lose out on the opportunity. All of us are getting older. Gosh, we're so fortunate. Our bones and legs and hands still move. But all of these people that I trained with long ago, they have so much to offer, and there's so much out there from the old school that is, you can't replace it with what's being taught today.
That's so true. Very true. Yeah. Very true. Well, I'm going to hand the mic over to Sifu Bob. I've been hogging the mic. Sifu Bob.
Oh, okay. Give me that Sifu Bob.
Well, and you'll have to excuse me, Malia. I pride Rusty on being able to pronounce a difficult word. Until the day, I must say, the way she did the first segment, that goes right out the window. I'm sorry, Sifu.
It's true. I couldn't say lateralization. Well, I can say it now. I don't know what happened when I was saying lateralization.
That's right.
Poor
Rusty. Yeah.
Well, Malia, you've developed your own art, Zhang Dai Kung Fu. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, sure. What would you like to know?
Everything. Everything.
Everything. What does it mean?
The mixture, the whole thing.
My style is called Xian Dai Kung Fu. And actually, the reason why I even developed the style is because there was a space and time of my life when I was with a woman without an art, without a style. I just didn't know where I was going, what I'm going to do, and, you know, what's next in my next chapter of life. And I have always had my opinion on the art and what I thought was good, what I thought was bad. I've always had an opinion what I thought was a good teacher. I've always had an opinion on what I thought were great forms and not so good forms. And I thought, wow, you have so many opinions, Malia. Put them out there and see if they really are what you think. Put your style together. So I put Shi and Dai Kung Fu together, and I combined it. It's like me. I'm a kind of free soul. I'm a happy person. It's a happy art. I teach fighting, but it isn't the number one thing I teach on the art. I like to be surrounded by happiness, happy people, confident people. I hate negativity. I hate people that are always walking around with their chin down to their sidewalk when there's so much to live for. So when putting this style together, my forms are happy. They're uplifting. My techniques, sure, if the people want to fight, I teach them fighting. My forms, I love my weapons. Even though the form movements are deadly movements, they're still done with beauty and grace. The art is a freedom of expression. And what I really love about my art is that I'm so into fitness. The reason I'm able to still lift my leg and I could still wear a size 4 is because I've never quit training. I've trained my whole life. I never, 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 ever quit training. I can still do hundreds and hundreds of abs. And I wanted to put an art together that I could help people when they're younger keep their interest in what I was teaching, to help them develop into a healthy, happy, wholesome lifestyle as you grow older. Because there is absolutely nothing wrong with growing older. It's all on how you treat your life as it goes along the way. The body's kind of like a car. You know, I go to my chiropractor once a month. He keeps me adjusted. You know, everything is good.
Mm-hmm.
So my style, I put it together, and then I put the forms and then thought, okay, this is a terrible story, but it's a true story. I worked at a club, and I taught fitness there for so long. I was teaching fitness. And the club came one day, and this was a few years back when they started teaching cardio kickboxing and all that stuff. And they came to me and said, Malia, we have a new class we want you to teach. And I said, okay, what is it? And they said, we want you to teach cardio kickboxing. I said, you want me to teach what? Cardio kickboxing. I said, well, what is cardio kickboxing? And they said, well, this is it. This is how we want you to do it. And so I watched, and I just kind of, I smiled at them, but in my heart, I thought, I'd like to see the day I'm teaching that. But I smiled, no problem. So when I went to work and it was on the schedule, I was teaching cardio kickboxing. Well, of course, not too many people came to the class. They didn't know what it was. They didn't care. So I had two people, Karen, I'll never forget, Karen and Yan. They're still my students today. So when they walked in and they said, well, we're here to take the cardio kickboxing. I said, I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm not going to teach you cardio kickboxing. They said, we have to. It says it's on the schedule. I said, I don't have to. I said, I'm going to teach you what I want. I said, I'm going to teach you a style of kung fu called Shi and Dai Kung Fu. And that was how it all started, my Shi and Dai Kung Fu. Then suddenly, I didn't have two students. I had 18 students, 20 students, 30 students. And so to myself, I said, oh, my God, it's time I go to my boss and tell him I'm not teaching. Are you kidding? Because they were so excited thinking they're cardio kickboxing was doing so well, when in fact it was not. It was Shi and Dai Kung Fu. So I went and confessed. And they just shook their head and said, Malia, you've always been the rebel in this club. I guess you always will be. But that was how Shi and Dai Kung Fu started out. And it was interesting because I do teach both Northern and Southern. I teach kicks, punching, stances. Mm-hmm. I emphasize strength of the body, strength of the legs, strength of the arms. And I really like to get people fit, slender. Not because I think people that are overweight or a little bit chunky or this and that, I think they're beautiful people. It isn't the reason why I'm always telling everybody you should lose weight. That is not the reason. People have a total misconception of what I mean. It means I would like to be able to extend your life. I would like to have you around a little bit longer. I would like to get some of that fat off your midsection that is suffocating your internal organs. That is my reason why I'm always trying to get people to be slender. Not because I think they look ugly. I myself don't want to be overweight. That's not my choice. But there are a lot of women and their husbands and their boyfriends are happy with that. That's fine. But that's not the reason. You want to be around a lot longer. So I try to get everybody that's a little bit out of shape into shape by working in Shi and Dai Kung Fu, because the art is not just the forms, the weapons, and learning how to fight. It does have a very heavy side of fitness that I went into when I took a little bit of a break from the martial arts. I really explored the road of fitness. And, you know, it was funny because people don't seem to realize that fitness has been around forever in martial arts, because I don't know of too many martial arts schools way back in the day that didn't really have hard fitness to begin with. To be a martial arts, you can't be a pushover. You better know how to kick and punch if you say, I'm taking martial art. Not say, oh, watch out, I got a black belt. I hate that. I hate people that say they have a black belt. So what? You know, I don't care. If you can't walk into a room and tell who the teacher is and who the student is, then that school is in trouble. But oh, here I am going on this verbal diarrhea here. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I agree. If you can't walk into a school and you know, and tell, you know, who's who, then what, you know?
Then you better walk out.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
You know, I never used to really put any kind of a rank on my students, because for God's sake, if you couldn't tell that student was a beginner out there, you're in trouble. You better learn about the art, you know. And so you could tell my beginner student, my advanced. But you know, something that I found out later, and it is, I'm going through that right now, getting ready to put my students into a tournament. I have a lot of students that I trained that are really excited about the art, because I have a tendency to be excited about anything I do. I'm just real upbeat about it. And if I see even the little bit of ounce of talent in anybody, I want to pull it out of them, like pulling a tooth. I want to be able to get them to do things they think they can't possibly do. So my students have a tendency to train 2 and 3 hours a day sometimes. Not that they're in there for 2 and 3 or 4 years, that's not so. It's just that they put in a lot of time. And what's really rewarding is because my students know how much I give to them, they in return want to give it back to me by winning. Mm. And that's so beautiful.
It is. It is.
Yes, it is.
Well, what tournament
is
this? Because I might have to find a plane ticket and get motivated again and watch the tournaments that your students are in.
well, they're pretty exciting. You know, I now have, let's see, there's a tournament. I think it's in October. I'm not putting a lot in. I'm just putting a few in. But I've been out of the tournament circuit for probably, I think the last time we went to a tournament was over a year ago. But my life sometimes, you know, I don't have anybody that trains for me. They may watch my students if I'm doing a seminar or if I have to go away. But I don't like my students to go into a tournament if I'm not there. And
right.
If I haven't been there to say, okay, I think you're ready to go. Then I don't want them going into a tournament. And there for a while, my travels were taking me far and wide, and I had to neglect my school and my students. But it was very fortunate for me that my senior students kept all the lower ones going, and the enthusiasm was up. And, you know, so now we're going to go in October and see what happens. It's either good
cool.
or bad, whatever. You know,
I'm sure they'll do well.
It will be.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Well, let me turn the mic over to Jeannie. Are you still there, Jeannie? How you doing?
Jeannie, are you still with me?
I am still with you. I have been loving this conversation.
I know. It's great.
You know, I'll share something with the listeners is that many, many years ago, I came across that first Black Belt magazine that she was on. And I was going through some pretty turbulent times in my own life, and there was something about that image that just caught me. And that cover lived on my wall until it finally disintegrated, probably about 10 years later.
I will send you another.
I actually have four now.
I want to be hanging on the wall again.
But for me, Malia has always meant strength and perseverance and just an incredible lady. And I have been lucky to get to know her. And I'm always incredibly blessed every time I have a conversation with her. She opens my eyes to so much. And I'm just incredibly blessed to know her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so I'm blessed to be on here.
I'm happy you still like me after you got to know me. I hope. By goodness.
Well,
it is so nice to say.
I want to share with the listeners about the Masters of Martial Arts ceremony that was this past June. Can you tell us a little bit about the
Masters of Fame? That was fabulous. I got to dress like a lady and put on a dress and high heels. It was fun, but you know, when you're used to being in your tennis shoes every day or a Kung Fu shoe and somebody wants you to now look like a lady and put on a high heel, oh my God, I had to hang on to my son. I couldn't walk in the things. But the Masters Hall of Fame was wonderful to see everybody all decked out, dressed in their tuxedos. Women looked beautiful. I was so excited because I hadn't seen Cynthia Rothrock for ages, and I've always kind of followed her career because there were not too many women way back then that went into the martial art movie world, and I admired her because she went to Hong Kong, where it couldn't be much harder to do movies than in Hong Kong. And so I've always kind of followed her career, and I was always just so happy for her. Whether it was a good movie, a bad movie, indifference, it didn't matter. She was out there doing it, and her name was out there, and she was a fabulous martial artist and, you know, form girl, and I had a lot of respect for her. So I got to see her that night. It was wonderful. We hugged, did all those crazy girly things, hugged, kissed, how are you doing, and promised to have dinner. So let's hope that we really do that. But to see everybody, Mike Santos, who was the gentleman who nominated me for Masters Hall of Fame, and it was so wonderful to see him, his wife, and Julio, and I mean, there were so many people from the hard style on the other side of the room that I knew way back in the day when I had to fight people that were in Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana. They're definitely back in my day when I was a fighter. If you fought Northern California, you had Northern California girls. But when I wanted to be rated and be number one, well, you can't be number one if you stick to San Francisco and Oakland. You got to get your butt out there and travel. So I traveled to Tennessee, and it was a rude awakening when I went to Oklahoma. I think I kissed the floor so many times because they were like a Sherman tank. I had never encountered fighters like they were out there. The women were, you bow to the judge, bow to the official, bow to the opponent, and away you go. Well, they don't bother to even get into a stance. They were just still charging in at you. They're very difficult to fight. So a lot of those women were on the other side of the room that were being recognized as well. And it was wonderful, wonderful to see that we can still move after all the fighting we did. So it was absolutely a wonderful affair. It was delicious food. I had one of my sons with me. I had two of my best girlfriends with me. Mark would have attended if he could have, but you know, Mark may live in Southern California, but his schedule keeps him all over the world. So he was with me through talking to me with texts and emailing me and cheering Mom on. So I had both my sons with me. It was a wonderful, I was honored, and it was so nice to be recognized and even remembered. That's wonderful. I was just so honored with all the wonderful people that were there and to see them again.
Yeah.
So it was a first-class affair. It was done good. You know how a lot of, I was the one that was always going, oh, I'm not going to go. They always say it's a first-class affair. You go. And not that I have anything wrong with luau's and Hawaiian shirts. And I don't have anything. Please don't misunderstand. But if you're saying this is a five-star affair and it's tuxedo and long gown, by George, you better be doing what you say.
In a tuxedo. Yeah.
I didn't want to be a woman showing up in a gown and shoes with high heel. But it,
yeah,
it was
I've been to like some of the Filipino five-star affairs, and people are like, I'm like, put off.
Oh, man, I
love,
love when they do the barbecues. I mean, my God, that's fabulous. But sometimes there's a time and place for everything, and when you're being recognized and put as a master in a Hall of Fame thing, I kind of think that's a five-star affair.
I'm glad you thought so, because me and Bob were and Hanshi Dan were like just stressing out for the last 2 weeks before the event, trying to make sure everything, I's were dotted and the T's were crossed and this and that and the other. What do you mean, more people? We got to get more room. Oh, everyone's got to be wearing a tuxedo. You know, and yeah, so I'm glad that it turned out well.
Thing I didn't say about the Masters Hall of Fame that was absolutely the most refreshing, and oh, it was so nice. I mean, how lucky was I? My students from Germany were there. So all of the black belts that were at the affair was at one time or another my students, and I taught them. And my number one student, of course, was Christian Wolf, whom I started teaching when he was just in diapers. And they were all there. It was wonderful to see them. And so that was like a reunion for me with all of the students that made the trip across the waters. So, yes, I must say that. It was great to see them.
That was great to see them. Now, I had forgotten you were nominated for the Lifetime Achievement Award, but I don't remember which. There's like silver, gold, platinum, lifetime achievement, and I'd forgotten which
probably
one.
I think it was platinum.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was platinum, I think. I mean, I'm really bad. You know, I love, well, I think, you know, awards don't mean that much to me anymore, and you want to know why? Because when I was a fighter, I had something like over 450, almost 500 trophies, and somebody stole all of my memorabilia from long ago.
What?
And I'm left with nothing. I remember Mike Stone when he had the Golden Fist Award, and I won all three of them. And all my trophies and all of my stuff was stolen. And so that happened to me, and I was left with nothing many years ago. The award is in my heart. It'll forever be there. And so the award that was presented to me, the Masters, I'm going to put it under lock and key so no one can steal it. Wonderful.
Wow.
Yes, that was really sad. But, you know, a lot of things in the art, you know, when I was growing up in the art and being a fighter, it was never easy. I never had trouble with the men. The men were always just fabulous. It was not even the women competitors, even though we were women. We are women, and we want to win. It was never them. I used to have people that would pull pranks on me. I'd have people try to attack me in the parking lot. They would, if I was fighting, someone would break into my locker and throw all my clothes in front of me, so I would have no clothes to put on. I mean, I had horrible, horrible things. That was what I had to contend with. And then one lady, I was watching somebody fight, and she snuck up behind me, and she came around with a roundhouse punch and hit me directly in the face. Didn't even know she was there. I'm watching my student fight. And I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Howard Jackson and somebody else kept pulling us apart because they didn't want to cause a riot. But, I mean, I've had to deal with a lot of things in my day in martial arts, and I hate to think I was the only one. I like to think other females had trouble also.
Wow. Now, during that time in the 60s and 70s, was it common? Was it very common to have women competing in martial arts, or were just there very few?
No, it was beginning. You know, it was I was right at the beginning stages when the door opened up. I'm sure there were a lot of tournaments that went on that were closed tournaments, like Taekwondo probably had women fighting for quite some time in the closed tournaments where it was only Taekwondo, and maybe the Japanese Federation had their thing and that, but this was open, and so anybody, you know, and that was a good thing, because that was how I learned a lot about Taekwondo, Japanese fighters, all different fighters, by going into tournaments and having to fight them, and you learned, oh my God, I got to train to be able to fight this kind of person. You kind of knew what to expect from different fighters, but as far as the only thing I didn't know, and I should have said that, when Al threw me into my first tournament, he never told me that back in that time, there was not belt categories. It was weight categories. So I've been in this school for 6 weeks, and I'm fighting a green belt. I said to Al, I don't even know. Why is her belt green and mine's white? And what are all these different color belts? What's this all mean? And then that was when I found out, you know, oh, my God, that you fight whomever's your same size.
Wow.
I thought, oh, Lord. And so that was the hard part about fighting and breaking into it. But that even gave me more determination. I noticed there were a lot of women, and I even noticed that today. Maybe they shouldn't have been wearing whatever color belt they were wearing because they didn't look much better than me as a white belt. And I kind of thought sometimes that people gave their belts out way too fast, way too soon, way too quick. Me, I probably will never give a black belt out to anybody. I probably won't. Can't say that I won't, but it really has to be. When you're going to say you're a black belt, man, you better really be that black belt that people want to be. And it isn't all about the color that's around your waist. It's about the knowledge. But I had so much fun fighting. My first major tournament was Castro's tournament in San Francisco, and I'll never forget. They said I won first place. I was so excited, but then they took it away from me because I was so nervous I forgot. Instead of bowing to the head judge, I put my butt towards the head judge. So I bowed to the wrong people.
Oh, no.
So they said, Maria DeCasco is first place, but we're going to take it from her because she obviously made a mistake. And then, you know, when I used to fight in, I fight in Oklahoma, and that was the only place that, yeah, they didn't know too much about Kung Fu, and they would always say, oh, here comes Miss Hollywood in her pajamas. I mean, it was horrible. I used to have to deal with all that stuff. And then I remember calling me over, and they want to know, what is all this fancy stuff you're doing? Well, no one ever told me that anyone ever would do that to me. So I'd have to break it down and explain it, and then they want me to go back in. My mind would be so, oh, I'll try to remember, what am I even doing? Mm-hmm. And then I've been in tournaments where my bra strap broke and they would call me over.
Oh, I hate when that happens.
Malia, I thought maybe, can you imagine? Why didn't they just let the bra strap hang, for God's sake? They come over then. So we thought maybe you'd like to know your bra strap is hanging. And I remember telling the judge, I was so embarrassed. I said, oh, my goodness, no wonder I feel so loose because my bra strap and they were great. My bra strap broke. And so I had to go fix that and then come back. And then another time I did a Selim kick and I kicked my shoe off. I kicked my kung fu ball off. I went high up into the air. And so when it came down, I didn't realize you could do your form again. I just picked the boot up and left. Had I not left, they could have done the form again. But you know what was funny? One time I went into a tournament to do the form, and every time I got up to do the form, my head would go blank. I couldn't remember even who I was. So I went up there to talk to the judges, and I couldn't think of the name of my form, and the only thing that would come to my mind is my boot that went in the air. So I said, the name of my form is One Shoe Gone. And so that form was forever called One Shoe Gone. I'm sorry, guys. This is probably supposed to be a serious program. Okay,
No, it's I think I've mentioned to you that we like to have fun on the show because, you know, me and Bob. Yes, me and Bob's whole premise behind this show is to kind of step away from the usual, you know, very uber serious interview shows and to, you know, sit down and get to know, you know, people as people, you know, and to have fun and stuff. And so far, knock on wood, we're doing okay.
Yeah. I am that way. And if anybody really knows my two sons, Mark Chikoskos and Craig, they can you can tell they take after their crazy mother because Mark and Craig both grew up with a crazy mother, you know. So they have no choice, you know.
the first time I met Mark, I'm like, wow, from what I hear, you're a lot like your mother because he was goofy. Not that you're goofy, but you know what I mean. Let me back up.
Oh, Lord.
Great sense of humor. What?
No, awesome. I was just going to say, whenever I have to go out with Mark and Craig, I really don't want to go because even at their senior year age, they still play practical jokes on me, and I never know. I'm always so alert because I don't know what they're going to do, but I just know it's going to be something to embarrass me in front of a lot of people. They still do that.
Oh, man. Now, one shoe gone. Speaking of one shoe gone, I got to stop laughing about the one shoe gone. Yeah, one shoe gone. What's your opinion about the martial arts competitors today that do a lot of the fancy gymnastics and acrobatics as opposed to the classic you know, kung fu forms that were being done in the 60s and 70s?
Well, you know, times change. What can you say? Nothing stays the same. And so with the martial arts, I think, you know, I think I mean, for sure, anybody who gets out there and practices this art and does all those fabulous feats, twists, jumps, I mean, it's amazing. But I really think that it should kind of really, really, really tournament for all of that and not let them compete against the traditional, I think. If you are traditional, then you should be competing against traditional. The only time you would want to compete against the Flash would be if it was for Grand Champion. But, you know, they put a lot of training into what they do. It's beautiful to watch. It's absolutely great for demonstrations. And I can't say that it maybe wouldn't even work for fighting. I don't know, because I don't train that art. I do know my son Mark does a lot of that stuff in his movies, and I'll ask, he'll just kind of chuckle and say, Mom, it looks good, looks good, looks good. You know, it looks good for the camera. But he's, it's so much different. You know, when I trained and when I competed, I had Chuck Norris, Skipple Mullins, Joe Lewis, Bill Wallace. I was with the cream of the crop. We were the beginning. When you used to compete years ago, the spectators, where the internationals, you know, the Long Beach internationals, that whole place just during eliminations would be packed with people. I compete, and I can remember, I think I won the internationals 4 years, 5 years. I don't know how many years I won the international. I'd have to have my trophies, and I don't have them. Someone else has them. But I do remember when you said that they called the house to a standstill. That was at the internationals. Mm-hmm. And I do remember I was just getting up from the floor to go up to perform. And at the internationals, you always were on center stage. Everybody to you, and they would, and I remember getting up, and I heard them say, "Everybody, bring their ring to a halt. We are going to watch." And my knees started shaking because I thought, "Please, you know." And but anyhow, it turned out all good, and I think that was the tournament where my most memorable fight was to fight Lily Equates, which was Benny the Jet's sister. Absolutely amazing, and I'm so sorry she's no longer with us. But she was, of all the people I ever fought, to beat her that night at the internationals, and especially, you know, she had all of Los Angeles cheering her on, and I just had a few little people, and everybody I remember walking up to main stage, they would say, "Why bother to go up there? You're not going to win." I mean, this is the kind of things people used to tell me, and I'd go, and actually, they didn't realize they were feeding me, because when somebody tells me I can't do it, let me show you if I can do it. And so to beat her that night was just such a reward. But the tournaments today, when I go with my students, they're nothing like when Al used to take me to tournaments. Not at all. The caliber of the tournament, the way it's ran, nothing like before. I miss the old time for tournaments. There was one thing that was... I had a student that recently, well, not recently, but sometime back when I put him in, lost because she was a beginner, and they said she didn't, her form didn't last over a minute. And I said, well, since when do you have to last over a minute? Because I'd never in my life heard that in all the years and all the training and all the tournaments that your form, they were timing it. And so they also took her first place away and said, you don't win because we clocked it. And I said, you clocked it? I said, why didn't we know about this? So anyhow, that I don't like. I don't like at all. All that poor person can do is 45 seconds, so be it. 45 seconds of something good is better than nothing at all. So I don't care. You know, I'm not, maybe it's because I'm not good competing, although my students are competing. I'm not one that can sit and watch something. I like to do it. You know, I want to participate in whatever it is. I don't like to, my butt gets sore. I like to get up there and participate in whatever it is. And if my students are fighting or doing form, sure, I get excited. But I don't know too many people that are out there today. I kind of am a loner, stay clear. I don't really mingle. That's why I'm amazed sometimes people still remember me, because I don't go out there and do it. You know, I kind of stick within myself. But tournaments, I had a blast when I was in tournaments. The best years back then, traveling all over, going to Europe with Linda Lee. I remember we did a tour, and Bruce Lee's wife, and Linda and Bill Wallace, and there was a whole bunch of us. So we went to Berlin and traveled. I'll never forget those. I mean, I never would have met all these wonderful people. I never would have traveled around the world. I never would have the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful life I have right now if it wasn't for my being a believer of God and martial arts, because martial arts opened the door for me. Whether it opened the door for other women, I don't know. But when I was a fighter, and I never had so many interviews in my life, I never did so many television shows in my life, and I was here and there, and every major show that was on the air, I was there. And I would never have had any of that had it not been for martial arts. And I'm so grateful for all the people that were good to me and kind to me and gave me, you know, I want to clarify, when I competed against men, it was never that I thought I was better than the man. I never think that. Man is man, woman is woman. If I win, so be it. But that was not my intention. It was that when you go to the same tournaments out here in California, you see the same women all the time. You're competing with people over and over and over and over again. I kind of got tired of that. And I wanted a new challenge. So at a tournament, it could have been even in Vallejo. That was when I went up and I asked, I don't want to compete against women. I want to compete against men. And, of course, they looked at me like I was nuts. They put me, time out, go face the wall. We have to have a conference here about this. So all of the black belts at that time got together and they said, well, sure. I don't think they thought I would win. That's why they said, let her go for it. So they pacified me, and they said, yeah, you can. And so I did, and maybe they're sorry they did that because I did win. But it isn't whether you're man or woman. It's how you present your art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not looking at the head at all. You're looking at the movement, where I used to have a lot of I probably shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to. I'm a woman that's very outspoken. I used to be told back in the time the only reason I won is because I had a big butt. They said, oh, the judges don't even see your moves. They only see your butt. And I said, I just looked at them like they were nuts. And I thought, what are you talking about? Because now I think about it, I think it's hysterical. But that was why I competed with men, because I got tired of competing with women. And I'm sure other women got tired of, I think I won something like 47, 48 tournaments in a row. And that was when I used to have people try to attack me. That was always scary. I didn't even want to go to the bathroom. I never knew who was waiting for me in there. But I had never any trouble with men. I must say, martial art men were absolutely fabulous. They were always kind to me, helpful to me. The women as well, they were never rude. The people that did things that were not so nice to me, I never knew who they were. But martial arts has been a wonderful experience for me. And, I always encouraged Mark and Craig to do it if they wanted to, but they didn't have to. One, my son Craig only studied the art because I wanted him to, and I wanted him to go into a tournament. And he said, Mom, I'm going to a tournament one time, and I'm going to win that first place for you and never ask me again. And he did just that. So the minute they gave him, he came and he said, yeah, Mom, now don't ever ask me again. Whereas Mark, he loved the art, and of course Mark, as we all know what happened to Mark, now he's famous. But no, my martial art experience was wonderful. Wonderful with men, wonderful with the promoters. I had even the people in Texas, Oklahoma, and all of that. They were, even though they laughed and joked at me, I dish it out, so I have to be able to take it. And I did.
Awesome. Very cool. Wow. Jeannie, back to you.
Yeah, I'm enthralled listening to all this. I mean,
I know. I'm enthralled too. Yeah.
Well, so awesome. Much, when you have so many, so much experience with life, and I've never been one to sit around on my butt. Even to this day, I'm up every day at 4:30. My first class starts at 5:30. I still run. I teach weights. I do all my ab work. I do my butt work so I can keep that good butt. I do my thigh work. I pump my arms. I've had my share of injuries. I mean, if anybody's had injuries, me. I've had tons of injuries, but you know what? You just keep right on going until your last breath. You just keep right on going. And you have to be an example of what you preach. If you preach it, you better doggone well do it. And I have a good life. God's been good to me. He has blessed me. I have a fabulous life. I'm happy. I have a wonderful home. I have marvelous kids. I have the most beautiful, sincere, real friends. I'm never really unhappy. What's to be unhappy about? I eat whenever I want to. I eat whatever I want to. Life is good.
Right on.
And I have a wonderful boyfriend.
Right on.
Absolutely. I have a wonderful boyfriend, and it's so great because he doesn't know one single thing about martial arts, so that's good. If he's bad, I'll beat him up. No. No, he's a... His personality is a lot like mine also. You know, he's just a wonderful man. I have a good life. Good everything. Awesome. God bless me with the best things in life.
Mm-hmm.
So there. Sure. Did you get your interview?
Well, I think Jeannie had a question, I think.
Oh, I do. I have a question.
Okay, Jeannie, what do you want to know?
Well, you've been talking a great deal about your martial arts background, which is what most of us know about. But a lot of people don't seem to know about your fitness background. You didn't exactly retire from martial arts, or you never left it, but you started your own fitness. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Fitness is a love. You know, like the art is a love, fitness is a love. I love to be able to take a body. In fact, I have a nice story to share with you. I have a young lady who just came home from college for 3 months. Her mother and father wanted her to lose 50 pounds before she went back to college, which she just left 1 week ago. She trained with me for 3 months, totally doing my She and I fitness program. Through eating healthy, training 5 days a week. We trained 2 to 3, sometimes 4 hours a day. She'd never worked a day in her life. I started her, took her through the steps one at a time. And after the 3 months, I could not tell you if she lost 50 pounds. All I know is she went from a size 16 to a 7. So I
Whoa.
Think that's pretty good. And it was just the most, I think fitness is so rewarding because when people come to you and their body is not exactly what they want it to be, and you're mm-hmm. able to mold, create, and work with them through it, because it's a hard road. When somebody enjoys eating and they want to get rid of it, you know, it's a hard road. You have to mm-hmm. be with them and guide them. And so I did put together a fitness program, which is, you know, fitness is fitness. Everybody can do fitness. Sometimes it's just your approach to teaching. Why maybe one fitness trainer is more successful than the next. I don't know why, but I'm pretty lucky, pretty fortunate, pretty blessed that everybody I work with seems to walk away looking years younger, pounds thinner, and their husbands and boyfriends love them even more. So, I mean, how good is that? My fitness program includes a lot of cardio, lightweights. I'm not into becoming a bodybuilder with I don't do that. So if anybody wanted that, they would not come to me. I use the weights to strengthen tone and give your bicep a bit of a jump start, your tricep, your ab work, the most important part, your tummy. You don't want your internal organs to be suffocated. You want to keep lean around your waist, all of that. Keep it small. I focus towards that. I focus towards, it doesn't matter what age you are. I don't look at the age. I look at their health. I want to know everything about them before they start. But my Shield Eye Fitness is something I've been doing seminars with, trying to introduce it into corporate training, trying to get corporations to maybe take a little bit of what Japan does. And in some of the corporations in Japan, it's absolutely mandatory that every employee does an hour before work or lunch or whatever of fitness of some sort, whether it be aerobics or karate, whatever they're teaching them, they have to work out. It's mandatory. And I think that would be a very thing to start here in our own country with corporation training, to be able to go in and to focus and teach somebody how to teach that. They might get better work habits, development, attendance, not so many employees that are sick. If a little bit was focused more on fitness than so many office parties. I should maybe not say that, but I'm not a partier. I'm a very simple person. You know, I don't like big crowds. I like to be, I like small sessions. And so I do that. I go out and try to get in with corporate training, and which I do travel worldwide. I go to Europe and Next year, hopefully if all works as it's planning right now, I will go. I'm so excited. I'm going to Casablanca, Marrakesh. I'm going to go to Morocco.
Ooh.
I'm going to work a circuit all through there. But after all my work is done, I'm going to go out into the desert. I'm going to go on a camel trip. I've always wanted to go out into the desert. And how it works is you go on, some of my students are going to go with me, and you have a guide, and you have cooks. They take the tents. The cooks come. They cook for you. They pitch the tent, and you just have a great time gallivanting through the desert on your camel. And then at the end of the evening, you sit and have dinner, and then they put your tent up, and yeah, it sounds like a wonderful thing to do. I love adventure. I love, I never have been. I was more for the adventure than the security of life. Life is what you make of it. My kids used to call me a gypsy because of I was here and there and there and here, but that was just part of me. And being what I was when I was younger has made me what I am now, and I realize how important fitness is because it's enabled me to do most anything I want to do in life. Even with severe injuries, I can keep going. So I do teach fitness. I'm open for anybody who is interested in what I do. I'll be more than happy to come to you if you have a group, or if you don't have a group and you want to come to me, you're more than welcome to come to my end of the woods. You can always get in touch with my contacts that handle my business for me, and I'd be more than happy to show you a wonderful time with the area where I live and with your training. I think you might leave with a whole different attitude about fitness and about weights and about running and, most important, about yourself. You might just learn to love yourself so much more than you do now.
Yeah, wow. So. Very cool. Let's turn the mic over to Sifu Bob. Sifu Bob, are you
Bob
there?
Bob, this is dominated by this big mouth over here.
No.
I have not been this outnumbered since we did a complete woman show back in like February. I just feel outnumbered, and I'm just sitting here listening.
You, darling, it was very easy to make today, Bob, because I did all the talking for you.
That's right, absolutely, and I appreciate that. Listen, Maria, you've done so much to open up doors for women throughout the years, martial arts and fitness. I was curious. There was something said about you actually working the Alaskan pipeline.
Oh,
was
pipeline.
That a job you applied for? Were you asked to join them? How did that work?
That was so funny. How that really happened is that at the time I have a friend, and he was a top-notch welder, and he worked the Alaskan pipeline. And I went to visit him. This is a funny story. I got to tell you this funny story because it's to do with the pipeline. So he was my boyfriend at the time. And I went to Alaska to visit him. And I went to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. Now, how do I know what Prudhoe Bay, Alaska is? I don't know. Anyhow, I get on the airplane, and I want to look pretty when I get there, so I'm all decked out. Well, Lord have mercy. I landed in Fairbanks, Alaska, when I got off the airplane, because I had to get off of this big airplane and get on this bushwhacker type plane. And there were all these drunken Eskimos out there, and here I am in my air shoes and looking... looking really, thinking I'm looking caught. Oh my God! And so then, when I thought, well, where's my airplane? And then I saw all these rough-looking men with jackets on and hood, and I mean, really rough construction men. And I thought, the lady at the counter said, to go with those men. And now, can you imagine, what do you think I must have looked like with high heel shoes? And, you know, here I am with all these rough men getting on this airplane going to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. So when I got there, you know, Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, I mean, it's like 150 below zero. I was met at the airplane. They wrapped me up in a coat and bundled me up and took me in. And that was my first experience with even knowing about the pipeline. And when I was there, I was able to see the welder. My friend that was the welder had a helper, and I used to say, how much money does that guy work doing that? And he said, oh, man, he makes anywhere from, you know, $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 a week, made a lot of money. doing that? And then he said, yeah. And so I laughed. And I said, well, if there's ever an opening, just call me. I can do that, too. So, you know, I visited and I went back home. And then years later, I got this call. And this call said, from my friend. And he said, Malia, the union, the Pipefitters Union Hall, is having trouble with women here in California because they're not allowing them to work on the pipeline because they have tried women before, but none of them could do it. And we have to find a woman who can do this in order to open up the doors. And so he said, would you be willing to work the pipeline? You could be my helper. I'll be your welder. You'll be my helper. I said, well, who asked for me? He said, well, the union hall asked me if I knew of a woman. And I said, I only know one woman that could do that, and that was me. So I said, oh, I don't know. I'm living in the sunshine and having the good old life. You want me to go work the pipeline? I don't know anything about it. But, you know, I one day said I would do it. So I thought, well, you did say you would, so you better do it. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So he told me, all right, you have to go, like, on a Monday to the Pipefitters Hall in Concord, California, and go to the yard. And, you know, well, how do I know what all this talk is about? I go there, mm-hmm. and I'm going to apply for a job with the union people. And so I walk. I was frightened to go into the yard. Actually, I was intimidated by all those men in there and these gigantic big pipes and all this machinery and all these grinders. And I thought, what the heck is this? So this one man was walking into the yard, and he said, hey, little lady, he said, are you lost? And I said, I don't think so. I think that's where I want to go. I just don't have the courage to go in. He said, well, are you here for employment? I said, yes, I am. He says, oh, he said, little lady, let me take you up to the office for the office workers. I said, I'm not here for the office. How dare you? I'm here to go work in that yard. And he started laughing. You are going to come and work in this yard? I said, yes, me. And so when he said that, I grabbed his arm and said, take me to the boss. So he took me into the yard, and then that day, yes, they did. They put me right away to work on all this equipment to see if I could do it, working with peanut grinder, wildcat grinders, working with pipes, heating this, that. Oh, it was an experience I'll never forget. And, of course, I did the job for 2 years, and I was the only woman out on the line. And I must say again, I had absolutely not one problem with any of these wild men on the pipeline. They were nothing but they used to play tricks on me. You know, we'd have to go to these awful, awful, awful outhouses for the bathroom. And they knew I didn't particularly care that much for snakes. And they would put them in gunny sack bags when they knew I had to go to the bathroom.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But, I mean, they like to play practical jokes on me. But if I ever got in a bind, I must say the other helpers, which were all young men working for the welders, were like the... They were like God. The welders were like God. They stood there while us slaves worked hard. There were things that I was terrified to do because I thought if you make a mistake, man, you're going to blow the joint up. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times somebody would come over and help me. But my experience on the pipeline was one that I could never, ever, ever, ever have done had I not had martial art background and I had not been strong because the strength, some of my physical strength and my mental strength, and just to be able to endure the temperatures and all the clothes you have to work. Mm-hmm. I think one of the most terrifying things about that job is when you're working on a pipeline and the welder does his thing, they x-ray it, and if they find that there's something wrong with the pipe, then you have to go inside the pipe and you have to clean it up and repair the mistake. And I didn't like it that sometimes we'd have to go in these big 360 pipes, circumference pipes. You'd have to crawl in it. It was dark. You'd have to drag everything, the propane, everything has to go into this pipe, and it's pitch black. You have just a little flashlight. You never know what maybe crawled in the pipe during the night, even though they tap the ends. But the pipeline gave me such strength. I was determined to finish the job. And at the end of the 2 years that I did this line, or a year and a half, or 2 years, whatever, it was really a compliment to me because the union hall invited me to stay. They said, hey, you can continue on. We'll send you out to the jobs and this and that. But, you know, like with everything in life, I like to have a little taste, experience, conquer, do, and move on. And that's what I did. But my friend gave me a wonderful opportunity to be able to work on that pipeline. And it traveled, you know, down I mean, like I worked Highway 5. You see, you don't realize there's pipe under there, but we worked 5. We worked a natural gas pipeline. We were putting up another that was along an existing pipeline, and we'd put in another pipeline. And so, yes, I worked really, really, really hard. I may look soft and feminine, but there's another part of me that's really strong and masculine, because I think that's what a woman should be.
Mm-hmm. Girl power. Yes.
No, I just think women should be strong. I don't think that, you know, there's a lot of things I can't do, and I don't care. I go up and ask my boyfriend to help me, but if I can't do it, I can't do it. But, you know, before I say I can't do something, I better go out and we'll make sure I can't do it before I admit to not being able to do it. But, yes, I think in the era that we live in, we need to be strong physically and mentally. And we need to, you know, have prayer in our life, to have guidance from God, because we can't always trust ourselves. We make bad mistakes, and if you have a belief and you believe, you will not be led astray, I don't think. And so, you know, I just, I want everybody to give, there's so many people, I feel so, one of the things I like to do is I like to take women that gave up their lives, whether it be man or women, gave up their lives so that their children could go to college, and maybe they had dreams, but they gave them, they put them in the back burner. Well, once your child is through college and all of that is finished, I like to see women still go back to whatever their dream was and to do it. And so I like to work with women who maybe at one time, whether, because I do windsurfing, I windsurf, I water ski, I snow ski. I just love sports. I love things that I have to be in charge of. I like to, of course, the boat has to pull me, but with windsurfing, I have to have wind, you know, snow, better have snow. But whatever it is that anybody ever wanted to do when they gave everything up to help raise their children and give them a wonderful life, I would like to be able to make those dreams still come true. There are a certain group of people out there who are still capable of making their dreams reality, and I would like to do that.
Right on.
Wow.
I know. Now, I didn't know that you were like water skier and snow skier and like that kind of thing. That's really cool. Now,
well,
so,
yeah, you know, my whole life I you know, it's funny. I really love outdoors. I run into people say to me, "What happens, Malia?" Because a lot of people that know me know I'm an outdoor teacher. What happens when it rains? I said, "What happens? We change our shoes and change our clothing and prepare for the rain. We just work through it, unless it's a, you know, tornado or it's a hurricane. We don't do that. But it doesn't conditions, none of that matters to me. It's just that keep going forward."
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Now, this is something I've been wondering about. I ask this of many of our guests. Now, if you only had 5 minutes to speak with someone that came to you and needed advice on accomplishing their goal on, oh, I don't know, fitness or even the martial arts, and you only had 5 minutes to speak with them, what would you tell them?
Well, we're in trouble. This is not a 5-minute woman, so they better not come to me. Oh, dear. Well, I would say probably if we're really referring to the arts or to fitness, it doesn't matter. If you're coming to ask for advice from somebody, you better know, first of all, what it is you want. If it's martial arts, for instance, and they're coming to you and to me, and as people sometimes do, you know, not everybody's cut out to be in kung fu, so I would suggest you go around and do as I did at the beginning, visit and look at all the schools and then find what art you think looks like might be good for you. The same thing with fitness. Not everybody can lift weights. Not everybody can run. You have to know what your body can do. And that would be the area of which you try to get the most training in. You have to be dedicated. You have to stick to it. You can't just start today and quit tomorrow. You have to be able to have a goal at the end, and you have to reach it. If you didn't reach it, then you'd be considered a quitter. Who wants to be a quitter? If you came to me as a little girl who had 50 pounds to lose in 3 months, whether she lost 50, I don't know. I don't bother with the scale. I go by how the clothes fits. She came to me a size 16 and she went back to school a size 7. Something worked. I would tell you, you need to know yourself. You need to know what you want. You need to hang out with positive people with whatever area you're going to go into. You can't have negativeness in your life. You can't be around negative people who pull you down. You cannot have any of that in your life to succeed. Because there's a lot of people you think, like I can think I'm really good at something, and maybe somebody would say, you're not so good in it. And then you begin to double question yourself, maybe I'm not good in it. Bull, you can be good at whatever you want to be good at. Do whatever you want to do at it. If you have the right teacher, the right motive, the right incentive, and determination, strength, and you cannot have, you know, before it used to be the children that would interrupt my classes. Mommy, you know, we're doing a private. I'm like, God, I'd like to put tape around that little child's mouth. No, forgive me, God. But now it isn't the child. It isn't the child. It's the bloody cell phone. If you can break away from your cell phone long enough to do an hour and a half, it's not going to go anywhere. You know, it's going to be there. The message will be there. You have to be able to, you know, give that time to yourself. You have to, can't give all your time to everybody else. You have to give time to you. Totally. If a woman or a man was to give an hour and a half time to himself every single day, he'd be a happier person. Your marriage would be happier. Your boyfriend would be happier. Girlfriend would be happier. Children would be happier. Because most complaint from everybody is, I have no time for myself. I do everything for everybody else. Well, whose fault is that? So that's what I would say. Do away with negative people. Know what you want. Put the cell phone away. Lock the kids in the closet. No. Don't lock the kids in the closet.
Oh, my God.
Don't do that. But you have to know where you're going. And, you know, you can't, when you become an adult, you can't be a fireman today, a policeman tomorrow. You are now an adult. What is it you want to do? Figure it out. When you figured it out, then hop on the horse and ride away. You know, that's you have to be able to take control of your life and be strong. You can't be a talker. I may be a talker, man. I am Miss Verbal Diarrhea, but I'll tell you, I may talk a lot, but for as much as I talk, I train and work and do. I'm not just a talker. I do everything I say. And that's a big difference. Perhaps that's why I'm happy, because if I was to die tomorrow, there's no sorrow to say, I wished. I don't wish. I did it all. People give me tickets to go to Hawaii. I don't really care if I go to Hawaii. I've been there 14 times. I've traveled the world. I've seen. I've done. I'm happy with a quiet little dinner and a book and sunshine. I'm happy.
That is so cool. And that's, like, I think the best advice anyone should do. Because, like, a lot of people, when they look for, you know, advice on, well, how do I accomplish, you know, I want to lose 20 pounds. How do I accomplish this? How do I accomplish that? They're only looking at the goal, and they forget that they have to do all the other stuff, like, you know, get negativity out of their out of their life and stuff like that. So that is wonderful, because, you know, you get a lot of people that say, oh, well, just do this, eat this, eat that.
I don't believe in diets.
Yeah.
You know what, just before you called me, I have to say I had dryers, half the fat, chocolate chip ice cream, and I'll tell you, it tastes pretty. No, you know, I, you know, when people want to lose weight, it's kind of like being an alcoholic. You can't just go cold turkey, you go crazy. You have to, you know, cut it down. If you had, you know, a quarter ice cream yesterday, you have a little tiny pint today. You work with people and you help them through it. You know, you talk to them and everything. I don't say, I tell, if you feel like eating a dozen cookies, eat them. You'll throw up and won't want them again. But, you know, it's through letting them have what they want, they don't want. It's when you take it away that they begin to sneak and want. You know, it's just like, hey, I work with them, and, you know, before you know it. You know, you don't, like the little girl that lost 50 pounds or whatever she lost, I just told her, eat your greens, eat your vegetables. I did suggest stay away from the sweets, stay away from soft drinks, stay away from pasta, but don't give pasta up totally, because pasta gives me fuel. I can go a lot further. And if you're craving something, go to the mall. If you want a cookie, get a Mrs. Phil's cookie. If you want an ice cream cone, go get one. Just don't bring the whole thing home into your refrigerator, because then you will eat it. But I don't take away. And there's no reason to be a closet eater. If you want to eat it proudly. It's not me. I'm doing the best I can for you. If you don't lose it, it's not my fault. It's yours. You're mm-hmm. a grown person. And you always kind of use the description of your children. If you tell your children, don't eat that, it's not good for you. And then I look at my adults, I say, don't eat that, it's not good for you. Then I kind of laugh. I sound like you talk to your children. And, you know, but no, you know, people who are trying to lose weight, it's not that hard. It's really not that hard. It's just all in your brain. It's all mental. It's all with the people you hang out with. And a lot of people don't have a support system, but so what? You know, you don't need a support system. All you need is to pray and do it on your own and have someone guide you. That's all you need. Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
So there.
That's wonderful advice. So there, yeah, that was wonderful advice. So is everybody listening? I hope everyone's listening, because if you want to lose 20 pounds, if you just want to get any type of goal, you know, in your martial arts, your fitness, or whatever, just remember what Malia said, you know, and don't, you know, and I think exactly what you said, Malia, is I think a lot of people in accomplishing goals and stuff, what a lot of people do is they give up their power. And they give it to whoever their trainer is. And they expect their trainer to tell them what not to eat, what exercises to do, and this and that and the other. That way it takes all of the responsibility off of them. And I loved what you said about, you know, if you don't have a support group, so what? You know, just know you can do it. And I loved that. Absolutely.
And you have to like your trainer. You know, that's important.
Yeah.
You have to like your trainer, you know, whether they, I guess they kind of like me a little bit or they would have lost them, but a lot of my clients I've had for 6, 7, 8 years, and as a matter of fact, when I moved away, my clients that I used to teach would fly to wherever I was at just to get another, you know, some more material. And I must say that a lot of the people I teach in fitness, I teach them so thoroughly, it's almost as if they went to 4 years of college, because by the time you're through with me, you really do know a lot about fitness, and you almost start a little business for yourself. You learn so much, and you know, it's not I don't believe in pills, I don't believe in anything. I believe in the natural way to do it, and yeah, that's the way life goes for me.
That's awesome. Now, speaking of going out to study with you or flying or getting some information on fitness and stuff, how can our listeners contact you if they want instruction or want to book you for
a
seminar?
There's two ways they can contact me. They can always contact me through Connections Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
That's Connections Unlimited 2, the number 2, at gmail.com. Because a lot of times I have Facebook, but you know what, I had to have someone show me how to use the silly thing. I'm not too much into this computer stuff. It takes too much time to sit there. If you start looking one or two, then you're caught up in it. But you can reach me that way, or you can always contact my business manager, JC, who always knows where I'm at, and she can be reached at also Connections Unlimited, and her phone number is
8463.
Who might have, you know, you're just starting up your business, whether it be fitness, whether it be martial arts. I don't have to know your style of martial arts to make you have a wonderful school. Not saying that you don't have a wonderful school, but there's always room for something to be better. Even with me, I learned so much from my children. They've always been my teacher and will always be my teacher, Mark and Craig. I learned so much from my boys. And everybody can learn a little something from somebody. And sometimes if you've, you know, anybody out there who might be listening who feels like giving up on something, I advise you never to give up. Don't give up until all hope is gone. And if anybody, you know, wanted to talk or wanted to have a seminar or motivational speaking to their students or whatever, you know, I'm one that is, you can put the subject in front of me and I can talk about it.
That's so awesome. Well, I'll be putting that contact information up, because I'm sure if the listeners out there had not been listening live tonight, we will be getting a lot of archived listens, and I'm sure they'll want to contact you to maybe do some bookings after listening to all the great stuff that your fitness programs have been doing. So, wow, you know, me and Bob and Jeannie, we're just floored at having such a great time with you tonight. Thank you so much, so much for joining us.
Well, I thank you for even thinking of having me on the show. It's an honor, and I hope someday to meet you in person, and both of you, Bob and Jeannie and Rosita, all of you, I hope to be able to be sitting at a table and joining a nice glass of wine.
I would love that.
That
we would all
nice.
Love that. And at the Masters Hall of Fame, I wanted to come over to say hi, but like everyone was buzzing around you, and I'm like, oh, I'm not going to bother Malia right now.
It was kind of hard to get spread yourself so thin and talk to everybody and do what you were doing.
Yeah, it was,
blessed.
It was
a wonderful time, and I'm happy we had it, and I'm happy you had me on the show, and I hope that anybody listening was entertained.
Yes. Very fun interview. I don't even know if I want to call it an interview. It was more like a coffee clatch, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a coffee clatch. It was really great. So, yes, thank you. And big kudos and thank you to Jeannie for being our guest co-host today. Thanks for joining us too, Jeannie.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Thank you, Jeannie.
Job, Jeannie. Thank you, Bob.
That was so
Robert.
Fun.
It was a blast.
That was so fun. Yes, and before we leave, real quick, Seafood Bob, can you tell us a little bit about next week's show, please?
Next week, we are going to have Felix Mencia Jr. He is part of the original Oakland Jeet Kune Do school that Bruce Lee started back in the 60s with James Yim Lee. And his father, Felix Mencia Sr., actually studied with James Yim Lee and Bruce Lee as well. I'm really excited. We're going to have him on and a few of his students. We're going to have a great show next week.
Yeah, that is going to be very cool. So join us next week, listeners. It's going to be a fun show talking with the original group from the Oakland JKD. Thank you again, Malia. And thank you again, Jeannie.
Thank you.
So much fun. And me and Bob hope to meet up with you guys in person. That would be great.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, have a great night. And we'll talk to
you
and all of the listeners at another time. See all the listeners next week. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.